You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Today on our show, we're going to start with a conversation about protesting for change in these heightened and divisive times. Even within the African American community, there is fierce debate about how to bring about reform in policing. To learn more about how different generations are responding to this moment, I spoke with Pastor Angelo Frazier of the River Lakes Community Church in Bakersfield. He has been leading prayer vigils in the midst of community protest. I also spoke with Fresno State NAACP chapter president, DeAngelique Jackson, who organized the protest Sunday in downtown Fresno. So DeAngelique, I'd like to start with you. In the days immediately following the protest you co-organized in Fresno, most of the headlines were around how peaceful the event was and how well-organized the event was. It really wasn't until later in the week that the conversation shifted to the list of demands that you and other organizers have for Fresno police. Can you tell us about those demands and the nature of the conversations you've had with leaders in Fresno since the protest?
So the conversations that we've had with leadership since the protest have definitely been widespread. So, for example, we've been in contact with a lot of our Black community leaders over the last few days, reaching out to us about our demands and wanting to talk about just some of the things that they've been experiencing long term, as in like kind of like we've been here, we've done this, we've been on this college campus for 4 years, but we've also been talking to community leaders who have been in the community for 20 plus years or 40 plus years to kind of learn to get a more all encompassing view of what it is we could be demanding. As far as with reaching out to the city, or not necessarily reaching out to the city because the city reached out to us, we've also been engaging in conversation. So we will be on the agenda for next week's city council meeting. We were invited by the city council president, council member Miguel Arias. So we'll be able to talk about our list of demands there. We've also been reached out to by the mayor's office, and we'll be meeting with Mayor Lee Brand next week as well. And the Fresno Police Department would also like to work with us and talk about some of the demands we have. So those are just a few of the community leaders that we're working with. We've also been reached out to a couple of other city council members. We've even had Jim Costa reach out to us as well. So we're just trying our hardest to just stay on track of everything and make sure we're engaging. We've had Fresno Unified reach out to us. So it's pretty all encompassing, and we're just trying our hardest to stay up to date with the information and make sure that we're getting everyone's questions answered.
And can you give us a sense of what your demands are?
Yeah. So for the demands, we are explicitly asking for change within our police department. We're asking for community involvement within our hiring process. We want to make sure that people from the communities that these officers are serving are the ones that are a part of the hiring process. We also want to make sure that officers should be coming from the communities that they're serving. So if you're not coming from the city of Fresno, and specifically from Southwest Fresno, there's no reason that you should be serving as an officer in that area because you don't understand the community. We're also asking for, in the sense of just our community, environmental and climate justice, we're asking for stricter regulations regarding our industrial plans. We're asking for the city to acknowledge our Black infant mortality rate, as well as what's happening with just our Black families in general, having to do with toxins that are in the air and that are being released. Like, we know for sure Hyde Park is a toxic zone, and there's no reason that that's a park that people in Southwest Fresno and West Fresno have been confined to playing in for years now, for generations. That's obviously having an effect on our community. We're asking for the city council to take up their role in controlling what the police department can do as far as budgeting and legislation. Under police chief Jerry Dyer, he took over a lot of the legislative lead, and a lot of like the things that should be going through city council have been going directly and staying internally within the police department. And that largely is the reason we're running into the issues we are. So we need our city council to hold themselves more accountable and to put the pressure on our police department to do what it is that is right. And then finally, but most importantly, or two final things, but most important things. We want to make sure that the officers responsible for the brutalization of London Wallace and the murder of Isaiah Zeze, Marietta Golding, we want to make sure that those officers are held accountable and they're brought to justice. And then once again, just finally, we want to make sure that community members, specifically young people, were involved in the hiring process of the new police chief, as well as we need other community leaders, once again, that are coming from the communities that are most affected by police brutality. We should be the ones involved in the hiring process of this. So those are just a few of the demands we have. We're also reaching out to a couple of different lead Black organizations to see if they would also be willing to give us their input. Like I said, as well as reaching out to the Black communities of this city or Black leaders of our community and seeing if they will give us input as well. So by the time we are at that city council meeting next Thursday, we can have a more complete and whole set list of demands that hopefully will be able to encompass all of the different factors and opinions that the Black community is made up of. And that's also including our churches as well.
So the list of demands that you have certainly are in alignment with what we're hearing from other communities in the Valley, including Bakersfield. Community leaders met earlier this week with Bakersfield police and shared similar concerns about hiring practices and other things that you mentioned. And Pastor Angelo, I'd like to move the conversation over to you. Tell us about the situation in Bakersfield, where the protests have been ongoing. And, you know, we did see some arrests. And then on Wednesday night, a protester was struck by a car. How are things going?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for allowing me to be on this platform. And as the young lady had said earlier, there are legitimate issues that are not only of concern here in the Valley, but across the country. I think the question, though, that we have to look at is, since George Floyd was killed, murdered in publicly before our eyes, there have been other officers that have been gunned down. And then at the same time in Chicago, over the weekend, numerous people have been shot and killed. And I think what we have to look at is, too, yes, our city council and all the meetings that were mentioned about are open, that effective change comes when people can listen. And I've been on the ground here. I've been here for 30 years, and I've been at the protest rallies, listening, talking to the young people there, listening to their hearts, seeing what's going on. And I agree, we do need justice. Where the difficulty is coming and where the problems, I think, are going to lie is that the sweeping generalities, not all police are racist. And I, as a police chaplain for over 30 years, I've met a lot of people and a lot of police officers who are just honest, good working people. So if you want to have a conversation with people, city officials, state officials, pastor leaders, I happen to believe, and I was raised in the inner city. I went through riots. I know what shutdown is. I know what profiling is. I know what all that is. But what I've come to learn through a relationship with Jesus Christ is that I need to see people as he sees people, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And some of the flashpoints, and I was standing just out last night, I was down there standing next to a young person, hundreds of them yelling, F the police. They're all effing bees. That is not helpful to this conversation. That does not move the conversation forward. I think rather than demanding, I think First Amendment says that we need to appeal. We need to do those things and stick with it for the long term for effective changes. People are dying every day unjustly. Many have died unjustly. We need to be involved in the process. And so I believe in due process. No matter how ugly something looks on TV in a video clip, no matter how ugly that looks, that person or persons, regardless of their skin color, needs due process. The Constitution talks about that. So as a pastor, yes, I can tell you that there's injustice and pain and hurt. But I think if we want effective change, then we have to talk to people in the way that we want to be talked to. And I've been down there for the last 2 weeks, and I tell you, I've heard And I've talked to a number of young people, and I can say Black Lives Matter. I can say White Lives Matter. I can say Jewish Lives Matter. So I think if we really want to have a conversation with people, we need to have the right perspective and appreciate the work that has been done and stop demonizing the institutions that we are trying to affect change with, because we're really not going to get anywhere.
I know that you've been an outspoken critic of violent protest, but there are some who have said and who are saying that it has taken violence to get the nation to take the concerns of African Americans seriously. What do you say to that?
You know, you can rattle the cage and do all kinds of crazy stuff, but I would say what Martin Luther King said, no, it doesn't. You may get the headlines, you might get some quick changes, but you're not going to change people's hearts, because this initially is a heart decision. You know, when I watch, for instance, you ask about Bakersfield. I've been here for 30 years. I've worked with the city council for 30 years. There's a lot of changes that have been put in place. When I talk with the young people out there the last couple of weeks, I asked them, had they gone to a city council meeting? No. Have they been involved in the process at all? No. In other words, I'm trying to get a sense that before you begin to accuse people of something, at least know what the system is. Violence is never the answer to progress.
D'Angelique, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well. You know, what do you say to those who have argued that violence was a necessary part of the process of getting us to the moment where we are today?
I agree with them. I definitely agree with them. And I at the same time, though, I think that it's situational. I've been doing a lot of interviews these last few days, and I feel like one of the most consistent questions that I've gotten from interviewers, and this is not an attack at you. I understand you have to ask this question for the general public, because this is a question of the general public. Everybody keeps asking, well, why is rioting so important to this cause? And I feel like the fact that we even have to ask that question is a direct indicator that our society, our country, is so unaware of what it is we as Black people are experiencing every day. The fact that you have to ask why it is we have to burn down targets in different buildings just to be heard lets me know that this community, that our country, has done a phenomenal job at suppressing the voices of black people. So when you look at the case of George Floyd in the city of Minneapolis, they had been receiving reports from the FBI for years telling them that their community was too racially charged and it was too polarized, that they needed to start easing the tensions between all of the different races within their city, or otherwise they were going to have an issue. Something was going to happen. And the city of Minneapolis routinely ignored it. So then when you look at the case of George Floyd, understand that it took them burning down half of the city just to get an officer who held his knee on a man's neck for over 10 minutes. It took half of the city to be destroyed for him to get arrested. We're not even talking about a charge, just arrested. And when they arrested him, they charged him with third degree murder. That's like accidental. If that doesn't show you that the city of Minneapolis, and they're absolutely a reflection of the rest of this country, if that doesn't show you that that city only values its economic gain, I don't know what else will, especially over, it values economic gain over the livelihood and the well-being of its citizens. So that expands to the rest of the country as well. Why is it that we're just now starting to see an outcry? It's because so many of these big bank individuals, so many of these large corporations are now starting to see themselves lose profit with the looting and with the destroying of different government properties that belong to the city, not to the individual people. That's the reason we're starting to see a response. But once again, like I said, that's situational. The reason why we push so hard for our protests in Fresno to be peaceful is because we can acknowledge and see that Minneapolis, with the case of George Floyd, the same thing that happened with Ferguson and Mike Brown, it reached its breaking point. Those cities reached their breaking point. Fresno, California, we have not yet reached our breaking point. That doesn't mean that what happened with George Floyd isn't also occurring in Fresno, because we know that our police department is corrupt. We know that there needs to be a lot of officers removed from that force, but our city has not yet reached its breaking point, which means as peaceful as we can be about it is what we need to do. Because at the same time as us being peaceful, we have people all over the country who are being aggressive, who are rioting, and we have that leverage. We came out downtown with 3,500 people. That's over 3,000 people who were ready to tell the police department and tell the city of Fresno things needed to change. And we did all of that while the rest of the country was rioting. If that's not a full display of this city's force and a full display of what it is the city needs, then we don't have another display. You know what I mean? Because it's like we essentially just went out there and said, we're willing to talk with you. We're willing to work on the legislation. But understand, if we can't get that, we'll reach our breaking point. And by that point, the community leaders, there's nothing that we will be able to do. And you would have brought it upon yourself. The same thing that happened in Minneapolis and the same thing that happened in Ferguson.
You have demonstrated tremendous leadership in this moment. And I just have to ask what it has been like for you to shoulder that responsibility.
It really hasn't been much different for me. Like, I guess immediately following the protests and what happened before, I breathe this work of helping my people towards liberation, of establishing equality and equity for all people is what I want to do with my life and, you know, with my career. So it's like, for me, seeing the outcome of this just gave me more of a fire and just increased my passion. I encourage people to continue to reach out to the Fresno State NAACP. I encourage the adult members within our community, specifically our Black adult members within our community, to reach out and join the Fresno branch, because this organization can truly be powerful and can truly work towards equality and liberation within the city of Fresno, as long as our community continues to feed into us the way that they are right now. As long as we're continuing to increase our membership, because we are a membership-based organization. We literally, membership is our lifeline, it's our bloodline. If we don't have that, then all of the work that we're doing right now, it stops.
And Pastor Angelo, what do you believe comes next? How do we move forward, not only as a nation, but as individual communities, and particularly in a city like Bakersfield, which, like many other communities, has a complicated relationship with its police department, especially given the 2015 report that found that the Bakersfield Police Department was the deadliest in America per capita.
Yeah.
How do we move forward from this moment?
I think three things. First of all, that we continue to pray and we get involved in the process, and that we don't make sweeping generalizations about the process. There have been men and women behind the scenes for the last 20, 30 years have been working to make effective change. But that gets drowned out, that gets stepped upon when accusations start flying. When you say to a department or system it's systematically or institutionally racist, you are really missing the point. The point is, there are people working very hard at systems. These systems aren't perfect. Working with the police unions will be a big change, because a number of reasons why some of these officers have not been ever let go is because of the unions, not because of the police departments. So understanding how things work will help move the cause forward. That's, I think, number one. I think number two, there are people involved, various views and what have you. I just happen to be, even though I'm a Black American, I don't go that way. I go that I'm an American first. That, I think, will bring lasting unity. If we divide by race, we will never have unity. We just will never have unity. And so I believe that we can look at people as Americans working in the system. There are, I don't know if you know it or not, there are police officers that are working inside their own system, helping and trying to get other officers out of the system because of their attitude, and they know them better than anybody else. And number three, I think we should try our best to use our ears and our hearts to listen to points of view. For instance, I'll give you an example. I agree Black Lives Matter. I am a Black guy, and my life matters. But I also agree that white lives matter, and aborted lives matter. But when you try to talk with the guys about that, they want to shut you down. That's not helpful.
I'm sorry. I just have to interrupt. D'Angelique, did you have a response to that?
Absolutely. I don't think that that's the right approach to take at all, especially if your city has the highest death per capita. What's happening in Bakersfield is something that needs to be addressed at a national level. And you can absolutely be peaceful about it, like what we're doing here. But to sit there as a Black man, as a pastor, as a leader of a congregation, and to tell the people, the Black people in your church, that they need to all lives matter themselves, sir, you are silencing so many people by doing that. You are effectively telling them, by sitting there and saying that the system is working for you, while you just admitted that your police department is killing more people than anybody else in the rest of the country, that is not the way that we should be leading our people. By sitting there and saying that you shouldn't be challenging the system at all, that's not how we should be doing it. Police unions, while they may have the power, they are not the end-all be-all. There's always a boss to the boss, and we are the boss to that boss. Police officers are here to serve us. They're paid, completely funded by taxpayer dollars. There is no reason that we should be sitting here as Black people trying to all lives matter ourselves, trying to drown our voices out and invite white people into the conversation to speak for us. That's been the issue literally for the past 400 years. So I really hope that people in your community can hear what you're saying and can effectively and politely say, I'm sorry, sir, but that's not the way that things need to be done. I challenge you to allow the younger generation within your congregation to step up, to talk with them, to listen to what it is they want, instead of all lives mattering your own people. That's not the way that we should be doing this at all.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. See, this is where this divide's going to happen. This is the community I live in. I know this community. I know about that report that you mentioned. I'm saddened about that. But this is what I mean.
But you're not willing to step up for your people.
You have no idea of what I'm doing here in this community. And so, again, this is the type of thing that's very hurtful when you make accusations. I just said to you, Black Lives Matter and all lives matter. And somehow that's offensive.
Black lives matter, but all lives matter. But all lives cannot matter until Black lives matter. And that serves why I'm telling you, fix the divide. Go find a group of young people all under the age of 25, preferably under the age of 18, who have grown up and lived in this new age, this 2014 Black Lives Matter age, and ask them what it is they want. Because I'm telling you right now, what you're saying is not reflective of what the younger generation wants. And unfortunately, we are going to be the ones to take over this city and this community. And if you are not working with us, sir, it doesn't matter the color of your skin, your economic status, you are working against us.
That's exactly what's the undercurrent here. If you don't do it my way, get out of the way.
That's exactly what young people should be saying.
Thank you for revealing that. That's exactly what's happened. If you don't do it my way, get out of the way.
Exactly what young people should be saying is the ones who are going to take over and be the leaders of this community. And you, sir, as someone who has held the torch for over 20, 40, 50 years, however long you've held it, you should be more than willing to pass that torch on to the people coming up behind you. So I agree. I'm more than comfortable with saying that out loud and to getting it to where as many people over the age of 40 can hear it. It's time to pass the torch. It's time to. Otherwise, you are just going against the cause. You're going against what the younger generation wants. The way that we see liberation, that should be the way that we should be getting supported. So that's all I have to say. And I genuinely hope people within your community hear this and they're willing and able to push their young people to forward and to sit down and have that conversation with you to where you can understand that in an amicable sense.
I appreciate both of you so much. And I wish we had more time to continue this conversation. It is certainly very complex. I appreciate you both for being so honest and so candid and for the work that you're doing to help your communities. So thank you for being with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.